This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and author of 20 books, including Feminist Fantasies. And now the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
Have you heard of Common Core Standards, the new plan being adopted in public schools across America? It's a plan for a national standard to be imposed that will decide what American kids learn and what they will not learn. Parents are really upset about this plan. Nationalized education standards should be unconstitutional under the 10th Amendment, which limits federal influence over the states. The General Educational Provisions Act, a federal law, prohibits any department, agency, officer, or employee of the United States from exercising any direction, supervision, or control over the curriculum, program of instruction, administration, or personnel of any educational institution, school, or school system, or over the selection of library resources, textbooks, or other printed or published instructional materials by any educational institution or school system. Close quote. Now that sounds pretty strong from federal law, a law specifically enacted to severely limit federal control of education. The new Common Core standards do limit local control of education. They are copyrighted and owned by private organizations. Federal dictates assure that 85% of academic standards in reading and math will strictly adhere to Common Core standards, leaving only 15% of the standards eligible to be altered by a local district. For example, Common Core does not teach cursive writing, and if a local school wants to teach it anyway, instead of keyboarding mandated by Common Core, cursive writing would likely use up the entire allowed 15%. Now, we're always being told to get advice from other countries, so how about taking some advice from our neighbor, Canada? Canada has no national standards. All standards are adopted locally, and Canada does not even have a National Department of Education.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. Can we send you the latest edition of the Education Reporter? Just write Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002 and read about what's working and what isn't in schools across the country and in your community. Write Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002 or go online to eagleforum.org. Join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. And fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steinblatt has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steinblatt and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steinblatt is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com, where you will see the names of every guest that I've had on RBN since October 23rd, 2010, as well as links to their websites. Just visit my website and click on the radio schedule button. Please also visit spingolaspeaks.info for links and various files. One of our talented listeners established the site to augment information not found elsewhere. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to spingola.chatingo.com. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is James Perloff, P-E-R-L-O-F-F. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, also The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline, which came out in 1988. He's written other books also, including Tornado in a Junkyard, The Relentless Myth of Darwinism, and other books. He's also just recently completed a very, very comprehensive article entitled The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green. Who really fired the shot heard round the world? Now, many people think that we should ignore history and concentrate on today and the future, that we should move on and forget about what has occurred. I do not endorse that at all. I think that history serves as prologue. Jim, welcome to the program.
Deanna, thank you so much for having me on again.
Oh, well, you're quite welcome. Now, you obviously feel the same way that I do about history, but why should this be of interest to our listeners?
Well, just to define what we're talking about here, we'll be talking today about the shot fired around the world and who fired it, and that is a reference, to, of course, to the Battle of Lexington, April 19, 1775. British troops marched out of Boston on the way to the suburban town of Concord to confiscate munitions held by the rebels. And on their way in the town of Lexington, they encountered a militia force. Shots rang out. There was a battle. 9 militiamen were wounded. 8 died. The British suffered just 1 wounded. They went on to Concord, didn't find that many munitions there. Then they were routed for the rest of the day and a very bloody retreat back to Boston by thousands of militiamen. To some people, they might think, well, you know, that's the Revolutionary War. We're talking 240 years ago. So what's the relevance? Well, the relevance, Dan, is this. You're talking about the shot heard around the world. We're talking about the shot that ignited the American Revolution, the Revolutionary War, and thus engendered America, the country we're living in now. And so it is relevant, but it's also relevant to listeners of this show, because as we're going to show today, what happened at Lexington was actually a false flag event. And your listeners have heard a lot about those, but never in this context before. And some people may think we're going over the top to say Lexington was a false flag. Now, by false flag, we don't mean it didn't happen. 9-1-1 was a false flag. It happened. The falseness is in the interpretation of what we're told about it. Same goes for Lexington. Another reason people might want to listen in is because what we're going to be talking about today, I don't think has ever been talked about on talk radio before. So this is going to be a unique show for Spingola Speaks.
Great. I like uniqueness.
Yeah. Well, I should mention that I grew up in Lexington, where this battle took place. We moved there, my family moved there in 1959 when I was in the third grade, and I went to Parker Elementary School, which is named for Captain John Parker, who commanded the Lexington Militia. And I graduated from Lexington High School, and every day I would walk by the Lexington Green where this battle took place, and I'd walk by Buckman's Tavern, which is a museum today. It's still standing. That's where the militia gathered before the battle. And continuing my walk up Hancock Street, each day I would pass the what was called the Hancock Clark House. This is where Paul Revere stopped on his famous midnight ride to speak to Sam Adams and John Hancock, who were the leaders of the revolution in Massachusetts and have a great deal to do with today's scenario.
Indeed. Now, I've been through Lexington. I flew into Boston, and I was on my way up north and was able to just go through it. Didn't have an opportunity to stop because I had an obligation. I was teaching quilting at the time, but I just, you know, you could just feel kind of the spirit of history, and it was just very significant to me to just drive through.
When I was, the significance kind of wore off on me when I was in high school, but I got interested in this because my son later on asked me if I'd take him on a tour of Lexington, so we went to all the historic sites. And at this point, having written a great deal on history, some questions began to trouble me about Lexington. And as I read the British accounts, they seemed believable to me that the Americans had fired first. And so I had a talk with a friend of mine who gives lectures on the Battle of Lexington in a tri-corner hat. And he said to me, "Oh, Jim, you know, the Americans would never have fired first. Look, they're outnumbered 10-1. It would have been suicide." And so I said, "Well, you know, Tom, I understand what you're saying. But on the other hand, it seems to me that British regulars were under tight discipline. They're not going to just start shooting for no reason because, you know, they were under orders not to shoot unless fired upon themselves." And so I decided to explore this whole issue of who really fired first.
Right. And you have some engravings and some images on the website, and people can follow along. The website is on the schedule page for today. Just click on the link, and you can follow along and see the engravings, see the images. So please continue.
All right, this gets pretty interesting. You can't see them, but you can if you go to the website. Again, the article's name, you just Google it. It's called "The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green." But the first artistic depiction of the Battle of Lexington was an engraving by Amos Doolittle in 1775, right after it happened. And if you look at it, you'll see that the British are firing this orderly volley, and all the colonists, all the militiamen, are either lying wounded or they're retreating with their arms up in the air. Not one militiaman is shooting or loading or aiming his gun. Now, if you go to the next portrayal, which was the lithograph by William Pendleton in 1830, now you see some of the militiamen are shooting while others are retreating. Then you get Hammett Billings' painting of 1868. Now, most of the men are engaged, just a few are retreating. And then you come up to 1886 in the painting by Henry Sandham called "The Dawn of Liberty." Every Lexington militiaman is now standing his ground. They're shaking their fists. Now, this is a complete turnaround. It's 100% change. The first picture shows them all retreating, and the last picture, they're all standing their ground. Now, you could chalk this up to artistic license, but there's another reason why these pictures changed, and that was that the understanding of the event changed. The original 1775 picture by Doolittle was a very accurate representation of how Massachusetts wanted the battle portrayed to other colonies who they were eager to have helped them. They wanted it portrayed as a slaughter. I'm going to quote the newspaper, the Massachusetts Spy, leading local newspaper of the day. And this is an article that was reprinted throughout the colonies. And here's what it said, quote, "Americans, forever bear in mind the Battle of Lexington, where British troops, unmolested and unprovoked, wantonly, in a most inhuman manner, fired upon and killed a number of our countrymen. It is noticed they fired upon our people as they were dispersing, agreeable to their command, and that we did not even return the fire. 8 of our men were killed and 9 wounded. The troops then laughed and damned the Yankees." So as you can see, we'll continue after the break.
Yeah. All righty, we'll be right back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
John Stadtmiller here. Sometimes in life, you get lucky. Well, today is your lucky day. Our sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, have just announced their biggest savings yet on their one-month food supply by Linden Farms. This great one-month pack includes over 360 servings based on 2,000 calories per day. While supplies last, you'll get one free month of long-term emergency food entrees when you buy three. This is a massive savings of $600 on a four-month supply. Again, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is giving you buy 3 months, get an additional 1 month of food free. This is a great deal. Act fast. The site, again, is AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com or call them directly at 818-720-0759, 818-720-0759. Let them know John sent you. Do it today. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Veteran-owned and operated.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendovite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendovite is all natural. Extendovite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendovite forever. Get your 2 month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Deanna, and our guest today is James Perloff, and he is the author of this marvelous article, and you can find it at there is a link on today's schedule page at spingola.com, and the title of the article is "The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green, Who Really Fired the Shot Heard Round the World," and you had just given us a quote from, what is his name? Doolittle, okay.
Yeah, this is a newspaper that reporting to the other colonies what had happened at Lexington and said that no shots were fired by the Americans at all. And this accords also with The official report collected by the Massachusetts Provincial Congress, which is linked to in my article, it's on, you can find it online at the Massachusetts Historical Society, had depositions from the Lexington militiamen. They all mentioned the British firing. Not one of them expressly admitted to firing a shot, although they didn't expressly deny firing shots either. Then you go to the memoirs of William Heath, who commanded the militia overall as the British were routed back to Boston. In his discussion of the Battle of Lexington, he never mentions the militia firing one shot. So what changed perception of this battle, this event? What changed it was in 1824, the 50th anniversary was coming up of the beginning of the Revolutionary War. In a neighboring Concord, there was a politician named Samuel Hoar who was giving a speech, and in the audience was the Marquis de Lafayette, very aged now. He'd been a general in Washington's army, and he told the Marquis, "You are standing where the first resistance to the British was made." And a Concord citizen said, "Yes, when the 50th anniversary of the Revolution comes, our town should be credited with firing what Emerson would later call the shot fired around the world." Well, this outraged the people in my town, Lexington. They said the honor belonged to them. And the people in Concord said, "What are you talking about? There's nothing on the official record that says you guys even discharged one round that day." So the people of Lexington went around to the aging veterans and witnesses of the Battle of Lexington, and they collected new depositions that amended the original ones. In these new depositions, they all vigorously insisted that they fired at the British, but that the British had fired first. They still kept that as part of the story. Well, this debate raged for years, but now all historians do agree that, because both British and American accounts do concur, that the Americans fired first. But the question is, was it the Americans or was it the British?
Okay.
And, well, I'll carry on here. We're going to put forth the argument that it was indeed the Americans, and there's a number of reasons why the British accounts are more credible, and there are other historians saying this. It's not just me. First of all, the British freely admitted that they fired first at the subsequent Battle of Concord, so there's really no reason why they should lie about Lexington. Secondly, British soldiers in their diaries who were at the Battle of Lexington said the Americans fired first. Now, these diaries were not intended for publication. They were discovered years later. And so why would British soldiers lie to themselves in their own diaries? And also, as we've seen, the Lexington militiamen amended their own depositions 50 years after the fact, which shows they were guided by the political pressures of the day and really weakens their credibility. So we're going to go forward with the proposition that the Americans did fire first, and it's going to lead us into the recognition that what happened at Lexington was very much a false flag. But to do that, we need to look at the historical context of how this battle came about. And there are two contexts I want to give it, Deanna. One is Freemasonry. You know, in the late 19th century, there were two bloody anti-royalist revolutions that occurred on separate continents. One, of course, was the French Revolution. And I don't think anybody today would deny that Masonry played a big role in that. It was exposed at that time, a book I'm sure you're familiar with, John Robison's Proofs of a Conspiracy, published in 1798. It was also memoirs illustrating the history of Jacobinism by Augustin Barruel. But even the Masons themselves said that they were the backbone of the French Revolution. Their own orator of the Grand Orient Lodge of France said this, quote, "During the 18th century, the glorious line of the encyclopedias found in our temples of fervent audience, which alone at that period, still unknown to the people, was liberty, equality, fraternity. The revolutionary seed germinated rapidly in that select company. Our illustrious brother Masons completed the evolution of people's minds and prepared the way for a new age. When the Bastille fell, Freemasonry had the supreme honor to present to humanity the charter which it had elaborated. In 1789, the Constituent Assembly, of which 300 members were Masons, finally adopted almost word for word, such as long been elaborated in the lodges, the rights of man. At the decisive hour for civilization, French Masonry was the universal conscience." So there's no question that Masonry was the backbone of the French Revolution, but what about the American Revolution, you know? Paul Revere's ride, very famous. He was sent on that ride by Joseph Warren from Boston, and less glamorized has been a second rider who Warren sent out, William Dawes. They took separate routes, and they both arrived in Lexington at the house where John Hancock was staying. History books tell you that, but here's what the history books don't tell you, Deanna. Joseph Warren was the Grand Master of St. Andrew's Masonic Lodge in Boston, which met at the Green Dragon Tavern, where the Sons of Liberty would also meet, basically interchangeable. And William Dawes and Paul Revere and John Hancock were all members of that lodge. The entire circuit of Paul Revere's ride from beginning to end consisted of Masons who belonged to the same lodge. And after the war, Paul Revere became the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts, which I mentioned in my article probably did not hurt his rise to historic glory. If you look at the whole revolution, 46% of the generals in the American Revolution were Freemasons. Of course, Washington was a Freemason. He was sworn in as president by Robert Livingston, who was Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of New York. Benjamin Franklin was not only Grand Master of Pennsylvania, he was Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Nine Sisters in Paris. And if you visit Lexington today, to get back to Lexington, if you visit the National Heritage Museum, you'll soon find it's run by the Freemasons. You'll see George Washington in his Masonic apron. And the official legal name of that museum is Scottish Rite Masonic Museum and Library. So it's pretty clear that Masonry did play a very big role in the American Revolution, which is not to impute anything sinister to the vast majority of American Masons today, but just to acknowledge that on both continents, Masonry, a secret society, was playing a big role.
Yikes. This is so interesting. Very, very interesting. And, of course, I think most of our listeners are familiar with the books that you mentioned, Proofs of a Conspiracy and Memoirs Illustrating the History of Jacobinism, which came out within a year of each other, which I think is very significant.
Yes, and today I guess we're writing our own Proofs of a Conspiracy, but on the American continent. But we're going to move away from direct discussion of Freemasonry now. We're going to focus more on the men who were directly the architects of what was going on, the men who Paul Revere rode to meet in Lexington, Samuel Adams and John Hancock. Now, when most people hear founding fathers, you know, they typically think of Washington and Jefferson and Franklin and Madison and Hamilton. And John Hancock, he's really just remembered for his large signature on the Declaration of Independence. And Sam Adams is pretty much forgotten. Most people today just know him as a picture on beer labels. But Americans of that day would be surprised to know he's been pretty much forgotten because Thomas Jefferson said he was, quote, the true man of the Revolution. The Boston Press called him the father of the Revolution and even the father of America. You know, in many respects, we're talking about a Massachusetts event when we talk about the American Revolution, because here was the Boston Massacre, the Boston Tea Party, and the battle that began them all. But Sam Adams was wrapped up in all these things. Now, to sort of start at the beginning, we had fought on the same side as the British in the French and Indian War, which ended in 1763. They had been the good guys in that war. Sam Adams, who his biographer John Miller calls the pioneer in propaganda, was very instrumental in changing people's perception of the British soldier from the good guy to the bad guy. Let me just talk for a moment about how the taxation came about.
Sorry. We need to pick this up after the break. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned.
That moment of panic. Sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone, frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit whatliesinyourdebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. Whatliesinyourdebt.com has solutions. Whatliesinyourdebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few $1,000s during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at whatliesinyourdebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit whatliesinyourdebt.com.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website
by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, D.O., and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's Stemgevity, Stemgevity.com. Or call now toll-free, 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steenblok has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steenblok and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steenblok is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
What do you need? You need Paracord. CampingSurvival.com is providing you U.S. military 550 Paracord. 550 tensile strength. Military specifications. Made in the USA. Available in 3,000, 1,000, 600, 300, 150 lengths. You can purchase yours now at CampingSurvival.com. Lowest prices on Paracord. Huge selection. All ready to be shipped. Black Paracord 1,000 feet, only $39.83 right now on CampingSurvival.com. But wait, use the code FREEDOM when purchasing and save 5% off. Paracord is a unique material used for many different reasons. Get yours from CampingSurvival.com now. Confidence born of preparation, CampingSurvival.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior. And today we are getting a wonderful, wonderful history lesson from his article entitled The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green, Who Really Fired the Shot Heard Round the World. This is just so informative, and I think it's just a wonderful summary and explanation of history, and we've all heard of these events, but now we're really learning up close, or at least exactly what happened, and who was who, and who did what. So please continue.
All right. Well, we've been talking about Sam Adams, and British, the Parliament at the end of the war, the British national debt had almost doubled as a result of the French and Indian War. And their feeling was that American colonists should help pay off that debt, not just British taxpayers alone, since the colonies were the main beneficiaries of the war. Now, this is a debatable point, but removed from the passions of that day, it doesn't seem really all that unreasonable. And what they did was they passed what was called the Sugar Act of 1764, to place a tax on molasses of 3 pennies on the gallon. Now, Sam Adams, who was in the Massachusetts state legislature, was the leading opponent of that act. And I'm going to quote what he said. Said, for if our trade must may be taxed, why not our lands? Why not the produce of our lands and everything we possess? If taxes are laid upon us without our having legal representation where they're laid, are we not reduced to the miserable state of tributary slaves? Now, this established a couple of patterns to what Sam Adams would do in his rhetoric. One thing he would do is exaggerate grievances beyond their boundaries. In other words, if the king was asking for a penny today, tomorrow he'll surely ask for a pound. And also, he would equate taxation policies with images of slavery. Well, the Sugar Act was quickly repealed in response to colonial protests. It's kind of a poor man's tax, sugar, right? So they came up with what was called the Stamp Act, which would have placed a tax on certain legal documents like diplomas and legal contracts. And that was repealed. They never collected a penny off of that. And then they came up with the Townsend Act of 1767, which placed duties on various British goods that were being sold in America. Now, Sam Adams rose to power during his protests against these, and I don't want to just rely on what I'm saying. I'd like to quote an historian here. William H. Hallahan writes this, quote, Samuel Adams was gathering and organizing a collection of waterfront mobs who were controlled by his lieutenant, Will Molyneux, and on occasion by Paul Revere. Henceforth, Boston was controlled by a trained mob glorified by its title, the Sons of Liberty. Sam Adams was its keeper. Adams fashioned another powerful revolutionary tool when he helped spread Sons of Liberty organizations elsewhere in the colonies where they could be orchestrated into mobs for demonstrations, intimidation, and street violence coordinated with events in Boston, unquote. Deanna, Adams basically became Boston's political boss, sort of a Tammany-style boss. Even before the Boston town meetings would take place, the elections would be pre-decided. Adams and his friends would select the candidates at a smoke-filled room called the Boston Caucus Room. His waterfront thugs would stand around Faneuil Hall, where the meetings would take place, ensuring nobody got out of line. It was at this time that Adams recruited his most important ally. That was John Hancock. Now, both men came from prosperous families, but Sam Adams basically destroyed all his family's businesses. He'd be the first to tell you he was not a good businessman. But John Hancock was the wealthiest man in Massachusetts, largely through smuggling operations. And he was recruited by Sam Adams to be the financial angel of the revolution in Massachusetts. He was very much a vain fop, so he actually had a gilded carriage he would ride around in that he had built in England. And before the revolution began, he had a bunch of ornate military costumes made up because he imagined that he, not George Washington, was going to become the commander of the Continental Army. So Sam Adams would play up to John Hancock's ego for the purpose of keeping the money flowing because Adams had none. Now, with Hancock's power behind him, Adams rose to be the political boss of Boston and began using intimidation methods against enemies. Andrew Oliver, who was the distributor of stamps in Boston, he was hung in effigy by a mob. His office was vandalized, and his home was stoned. He resigned his position, but that wasn't good enough for Sam Adams. He had him dragged out to Boston Common. He was forced to resign in public before a mob. And Adams learned that these terror tactics could be used to intimidate elected officials as well. So he used to fill the gallery of the Massachusetts State Legislature with his Mohawks. That was a nickname for the Sons of Liberty. If you were a Tory, if you thought to be someone who was a loyalist to Britain, your name would be posted on the Liberty Tree, and you would be subject to intimidation and violence. John Mine, who was an intellectual that began Boston's first circulating library, ran an opposition newspaper called the Boston Chronicle. And Adams was forcing Boston merchants to boycott British goods, which was making them go out of business, Mine published Ship's Manifest showing that Adams' good buddy John Hancock was still carrying on profitable trade with Britain. So Mine's office was ransacked. He was attacked on the street by 20 thugs. An arrest warrant was put out for him. And Sam Adams personally assisted in the search for him. He escaped Boston, but freedom of the press went with him. Now, what happened to people who were thought to be loyalists? At night, these mobs of Sam Adams would get liquored up into Boston taverns and then be summoned out by the ringing of a bell. And they'd surround the loyalist house, and they would give Mohawk war whoops, and then they'd have a home invasion. People would be stripped naked, tarred and feathered. Their homes would be looted and ransacked. And this is all being done in the name, supposedly, of patriotism. But
that's
Adam
an early day SWAT team.
Sorry.
It's an early day SWAT team, right?
Absolutely. These are terrorist tactics, circa 1765. Now, Adams overstepped his bounds when he went after the Lieutenant Governor, Thomas Hutchinson. He roused up the mob by saying that the Stamp Act had been dreamed up by Hutchinson. Well, this is just a slander. Hutchinson was Massachusetts-born and raised, and he had opposed the Stamp Act and the legislature. That didn't matter to the drunken mob of about 500 on the night of August 26, 1765. They surrounded Hutchinson's home. He was a widower. He barely escaped with him and his children with their lives. And for the entire night, they attacked the house with axes. They stole all the clothing, all the silverware. He had a library that had the history of Massachusetts in it. Priceless documents were thrown into the mud, torn apart. They destroyed the cupola of his home. His home was destroyed. And the specter of that home brought such shame throughout Massachusetts on Boston that even Adams had to criticize the incident, but he attributed it to what he called vagabond strangers. Now, there was such an outcry about this that eight of the perpetrators were arrested, but a mob simply broke into the Boston jail the next day and freed the guilty. They were never brought to trial. So at this point in Boston, they'd been run by a mob. You could not impanel a jury to bring these thugs to justice. Freedom of speech and freedom of the press were perishing under Sam Adams' virtual dictatorship. And the representative in the Massachusetts State Legislature from Barnstable, Mass., said that he preferred to live under the ruler at 3,000 miles away, meaning King George, than the ruler in Boston. And Barnstable, an elderly widow, you can look her up, Abigail Freeman, was tarred and feathered, elderly woman, for being a loyalist. So it was under these circumstances in 1768, contrary to what we've been told, that British troops came to Boston to restore order. I want to read to you what Captain Evelyn wrote back to his father in England. His father was a clergyman, quote, "Our arrival has in great degree restored that liberty they have so long been deprived of, liberty of speech and security to their persons and property, which for years has been at the mercy of a most villainous mob," unquote. Isn't it interesting to hear a British officer talking about how they've restored liberty to Boston? Well, Sam Adams immediately sought to expel these troops from Boston, and so the Sons of Liberty would pick fights in taverns. But Sam Adams was looking for a catalytic incident that could drive the British troops out. And this will lead us to the next episode, which is really a prelude to the Battle of Lexington. It was the Boston Massacre, which I'm sure everyone has heard of.
Oh, absolutely. This is just not what we thought our history was.
This is what I was told when I went to Parker School in Lexington, okay? On March 5th, 1770, handbills suddenly appeared in the streets of Boston. And here's what they said. It said, "This is to inform ye rebellious people in Boston that ye soldiers in ye 14th and 29th regiments are determined to join together and defend themselves against all who oppose them. Signed, ye soldiers of ye 14th and 29th regiments." Now, it is very doubtful that the British soldiers wrote this. It was passed out to inflame the passions of the Bostonians. Now, that evening, in the usual way, the bells started ringing and the mobs poured out of the taverns. And on King Street, where the customs house was, there was a lone sentry on duty who was surrounded by a mob, began flinging rocks and chunks of ice at him. And the captain, officer of the watch at the nearby barracks, Captain Thomas Preston, came with seven soldiers to his rescue. And he was afraid that this mob was going to storm the customs house and break into it. Now, the bells kept tolling, and the mob grew to about 300 or 400 people.
Jim, we do need to take a real quick break. Jim, we do need to take a real quick break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack, for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer-rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next-generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes. COQ10 with hawthorn, glucosamine chondroitin, sea cucumber, colloidal minerals, Superfam and Super Male Plex, colon enhancer, our top selling liquid, Cal Mag Vitamin D, MSM Sulfur Capsules, and Elderberry Power Capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
Ooh, nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Deanna, our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and today he is talking about his most recent article, which is entitled The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green, Who Really Fired the Shot Heard Round the World. And we are certainly hearing some things that we haven't heard in our government schools. So please continue.
All right. Well, before I resume that narrative of the Boston Massacre, I just want to back up for a moment and mention that if people go to the online article, there's documentation there. I don't want people to think I'm just making this up. I want to quote what the Lieutenant Governor Hutchinson said about Sam Adams. He said, quote, "I doubt whether there is a man of greater malignity of heart or who less scruples any measure ever so criminal to accomplish his purposes. And I think I do him no injustice when I say he wishes the destruction of every friend to government in America." Now, when these British troops had been sent to Boston, Adams tried to drive them out, and he sent something called a Journal of Events around other colonies, which alleged that every day the British soldiers were raping the ladies of Boston and beating up small boys. These were images he loved to use. The governor of Massachusetts, Francis Bernard, said, quote, "If the devil himself had taken a hand, it would not have been got together a greater collection of impudent, virulent, and seditious lies and perversions of truth than found in this publication," unquote. In their own defense, by the way, Deanna, the British soldiers said, "We should hardly need to resort to rape in a city that is already so teeming with the ladies of easy virtue." But I want to get back to the Boston Massacre. We've got a crowd of some 300 to 400 closing in on these nine soldiers. They begin hitting them with clubs and cudgels. And people in the crowd are yelling fire because they know that they're under orders not to shoot at citizens. One of the soldiers was knocked to off his feet by a club. He jumped on his feet, and hearing the word fire, he raised his musket and fired. And others did sporadically as well. And when it was over, three of the rioters lay dead and two were mortally wounded. And this became known as the Boston Massacre. Well, the very next morning, Sam Adams delivered a fiery speech and ordained himself and Hancock heads of a committee demanding the immediate removal of all British troops from Boston. Now, there was a trial for these soldiers for the Boston Massacre, and I'm sure you've probably seen, by the way, Paul Revere's famous print of the Boston Massacre. I'm sure most of you have seen it. If you go online, you'll find that Paul Revere's print, which he produced in just 3 days, has about a dozen misrepresentations in it, but the most glaring one is its portrayal of the soldiers shooting an orderly volley upon the command of an officer with his sword raised. Well, there was a trial, a murder trial, for these British soldiers, and Sam Adams thought that with his Mohawks in the jury, the Sons of Liberty, he'd soon see nine British soldiers swinging from the gallows on Boston Common. But his second cousin, John Adams, the future president, assumed the defense. And John Adams did a creditable job. The trial, he had 38 witnesses testify that there had been a plot to attack the Redcoats that night. He succeeded in getting the jury from people from outside of Boston, so Sam Adams did not get his Mohawks on the jury. But really, the real blow for the prosecution in that trial came with a deathbed confession of one of the wounded men named Patrick Carr. On his deathbed, he confessed that the British soldier had shot him in self-defense, and he forgave him for doing so. So wow. Sam Adams was so outraged by that confession, he gave a public speech denouncing it, and he said that the confession must be disregarded because Patrick Carr was a papist. In other words, this man was a Roman Catholic, so playing to the prejudices of the day, Sam Adams said you cannot believe him because he's a Catholic. Now, a great number of depositions were collected by Sam Adams in an effort to prove that it had been a wanton act of murder. And helping collect these was his mob leader, Will Molyneux. So you know a lot of these depositions were just members of the Adams mob. But I'm going to quote from a couple of them, and they read as if they're written by a playwright of melodramas. This is deposition number 31. You can find these online and in my article. I, Nathaniel Appleton of Lawful Age, testify, I'm going to condense this, that standing at my door, I saw a number of soldiers, 12 or 15 as I could best gauge, running towards the barracks, and passing by, seeing me in company with Deacon Marsh at my door, turned off their course and rushed at us with uplifted weapons without speaking or doing the least to provoke them. I further declared that at that time, my son, a lad of about 12, was on an errand and soon came home and told me he was met by soldiers with cutlasses, and one of them attempting to strike him, the child begged for his life, saying, "Pray, soldier, save my life." And the soldier replied, "No, damn you, I will kill you all," and spun him with his cutlass, which glanced down his arm. But the child came home happily, having received no other damage than a bruise on his arm. You find most of his deponents say they got a bruise. Now, if they'd really been wounded, they would have to show that, but a bruise will go away, of course. There's one other deposition here I'll quote from, a deposition number 66. I, John Wilson, testify. I came down King Street opposite the Custom House. The soldiers had insulted the inhabitants. He describes how he sees his sentry being whispered to by an officer. Then he sees, he's referring to Captain Preston and his men. He says, "I saw an officer leading men coming from the main guard, crying to the inhabitants, 'Damn you, make way, you boogers.' I, not moving from my place, was struck by one in the hip with the butt of his musket, which bruised me so much, it was the next day very sore. The officer, seeing the soldiers strike me, said to the soldier in an angry manner, 'Why don't you prick the boogers?' Then he describes how the soldiers drew up in a semicircle, and then he says, quote, 'Some small boys made a noise to the soldiers, on which the officer said to them, "Why don't you fire? Damn you, fire." They thereupon fired, and men fell dead in my sight." Well, we know it wasn't small boys. We know it was a mob armed with clubs. And the jury found them innocent, the soldiers. This is Massachusetts men finding them innocent. Two were convicted of manslaughter, but Sam Adams got to see no redcoats swinging from the gallows on Boston Common. But he never forgot it. And 4 years later, John Hancock gave a torrid Boston Massacre anniversary oration, and most people understand that it's basically Sam Adams, who wrote that for Hancock. I just want to give you a sampling of this just to demonstrate the level of propaganda that's going on at the time. Here's what Hancock's saying with really Sam Adams' words in his mouth. "But I forbear and come reluctantly to the transactions of that dismal night when Satan, with his chosen band, opened the sluices of New England's blood and sacrilegiously polluted our land with the dead bodies of her guiltless sons. Let this sad tale of death never be told without a tear. Let every parent tell the shameful story to his listening children until tears of pity glisten in their eyes and boiling passions shake their tender frames. Let all America join in one common prayer to heaven that the inhuman, unprovoked murders of the 5th of March, 1770, executed by the cruel hand of Preston and his sanguinary coadjutors, may ever stand in history without parallel. Ye dark, designing knaves, ye murderers, how dare ye tread upon the earth which is drunk in the blood of slaughtered innocents shed by your wicked hands." This goes on for about an hour.
Wow.
All right.
Now, let me play the devil's advocate
here.
That's
Boston Massacre that has many common denominators with the battle at Lexington. And I think we're almost up to a break, but we're going to transition into the Boston Tea Party, which is the next step in this saga.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. Why were the British soldiers still occupying the land when the French and Indian Wars were over? What was the purpose?
They didn't come until 1768 to restore order in Boston. They only came to Boston. They were not occupying the American continent. They came in 1768 to restore order to Boston. They were not down in Virginia or New York or South Carolina. That's the Revolutionary War.
Okay.
We're talking about a Boston event here.
Okay.
I should mention that if you read the speeches in Parliament and the British press, they considered Boston, and I'm a Bostonian myself, by the way, they said that Boston was more trouble than all the other colonies put together.
And what do you attribute that to?
The activities of Hancock and Adams.
Okay. Mobsters, right? And their mob. Their objectives and all the things that they were involved in. Wow. And the fact that they
were leading it. How much time do we have now before the break?
We have just a few seconds. So the next thing that when we come back from the break, we're going to a break. We won't be back until 6 minutes after the hour. And then you're going to be talking about the Boston Tea Party, which of course has to do with, what, the Sugar Act?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or I should say, not with the Sugar Act, but with the Tea Act. But we'll follow up with an explanation of that.
Okay. Well, this is certainly fascinating and certainly not something that we learned in the government schools. And it kind of leads into everything that's happened since then. Because there was a certain mentality that people seem to pick up and carry forth through the decades. All right, we are going to break. We'll be back at 6 minutes after the hour.